This is an ABC podcast.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. I'm Sabra Lane. The new COVID-19 variant known as Omicron continues to spread through Europe. It's made its way into the heart of London. The Netherlands has confirmed more than a dozen cases. The variant has also been detected in Germany and Denmark. While there are fears Omicron could spread quickly with current vaccines less effective, there is some positive news from South Africa. So far, doctors say the symptoms are mild. Europe correspondent Nick Doll.
As news of the variant was spreading around the world last week, two flights from South Africa with more than 600 passengers on board landed in Amsterdam. Authorities decided to quarantine and test the lot of them, and one in 10 returned a positive COVID result. After analysing the positive samples, Dutch scientists say they've found 13 cases of Omicron. The UK also had flights land from Southern Africa last Friday, but in a TV interview with the BBC, the Health Secretary, Sajid Javid, admitted some were allowed into the community.
How did they get home from the airport?
Well, they would have got home in the normal way, but
on
really
public transport.
The speed at which we worked, it is just not possible to go any faster than that.
Sajid Javid says all recent arrivals from Southern Africa have been contacted and asked to isolate and get tested, but a third case has now been detected here. Authorities say the individual had links with Southern African travel and they'd spent time in the busy Westminster region of central London before leaving the country. While precise genomic sequencing is time-consuming, the Health Secretary says suspected new cases will show up quickly because Omicron possesses the so-called S-gene dropout. It's a characteristic that PCR tests can pick up easily, so it can be used as a kind of proxy.
Both the government labs and other private labs, they will all be required to do the S-gene dropout test on every test.
Okay.
And that result would come very, very swiftly.
While it's still not clear exactly how effective existing vaccines will be against Omicron, manufacturers are already working to update them. Dr. Paul Burton is the chief medical officer at Moderna.
We've mobilised hundreds of people here in the US and around the world. We started that really early on Thursday, on Thanksgiving Day. We should know about the ability of the current vaccine to provide protection in the next couple of weeks. But the remarkable thing about the mRNA vaccine is that we can move very fast. If we have to make a brand new vaccine, I think that's going to be early 2022 before that's really going to be available in large quantities.
While the Omicron variant does appear to be highly transmissible, there are at least some positive signs coming from South Africa, where it was first observed. Dr. Angelique Kurtze is a doctor from Pretoria. She was one of the first to report a pattern of symptoms in her patients that helped trigger an investigation into the variant. She says those symptoms didn't appear to be serious.
And she's got this body aches and pain with a bit of a headache. Not really a sore throat, more a scratchy type of description, and no cough and no loss of smell or taste. What we are seeing clinically in South Africa, and remember I'm at the epicenter, that's where I'm practicing, is extremely mild. For us, that's mild cases. We haven't admitted anyone. I spoke to other colleagues of mine, the same picture.
And the whole world will be hoping that picture doesn't change. This is Nick Doll in London reporting for AM.
Two travellers from Southern Africa have tested positive in New South Wales to the new Omicron COVID variant. While much remains unknown about this new virus strain, many nations, including Australia, have already responded by reinstating a tighter border on international travellers from countries of concern. Epidemiologists say it's important to remain alert without overreacting as more information emerges in coming weeks. It's again prompted calls for wealthier nations to help poorer countries vaccinate their populations to avoid inevitable mutations. Noor Haider reports.
As Australians look forward to the summer holidays, COVID-19 appears to have delivered yet another curveball. A new strain of the virus, dubbed Omicron by the World Health Organization, was first reported in South Africa earlier this month. Cases have since been detected in travellers across Europe, Israel and Hong Kong, and as of last night, Australia. Professor Catherine Bennett is Chair in Epidemiology at Deakin University.
I think we've got everything in place we need to, just to put us into a holding pattern until we get a much better, fuller understanding of this variant.
As a precaution, the federal government on Saturday moved to ban All non-citizens travelling from 9 countries across southern parts of the African continent from entering Australia, while Australians arriving from those countries must now undergo 14 days of hotel quarantine. Some states and territories have also taken the step of requiring all international arrivals to be tested and self-isolate for 72 hours, irrespective of their vaccination status.
If it turns out that it's not a risk to us, even if it's a bit more infectious, but our vaccine still works and our coverage will protect us, particularly if it's responsible for a more benign illness, then we can ease back on those restrictions. But it's important that we do dial them up.
Scientists are moving quickly to gather intel about Omicron, with cases rapidly surging in South Africa and early evidence suggesting an increased risk of reinfection.
Their vaccination rates are low in that region. South Africa, which has one of the higher rates, still has less than 25% of the population vaccinated. So that will make it difficult to understand how, even seeing how the virus spreads in those settings, what that means for highly vaccinated countries.
Omicron has a large number of mutations, which raises questions about whether it can circumvent existing vaccines.
Reassuringly, we're hearing that from South African Medical Association, that the infections are presenting with a more mild illness, a slightly different profile of symptoms, and an infection that seems to be self-resolving in a couple of days.
If that is the case, it'll be met with a sigh of relief around the world. Tim Costello is the director of the End COVID for All campaign, which has been warning that without a coordinated effort to lift vaccination rates globally, mutant strains will keep emerging.
The whole world is interdependent, profoundly interconnected. And the only way out is to vaccinate, and to do it with not a nationalist mindset, but with an internationalist commitment.
Australia has committed hundreds of millions of dollars to support vaccination in the Pacific and has contributed $130 million to the COVAX facility, an initiative aimed at making vaccines more accessible.
We've been warned there will be yet, because we haven't vaccinated the world's poor, more mutant strains. We cannot simply, even if we get out of this Omicron disaster now with the vaxxers working, just rest on our laurels.
That's Reverend Tim Costello ending Noor Haidar's report. The Prime Minister Scott Morrison says he'll convene National Cabinet today to discuss Australia's response. South Africa's president has lashed out at wealthy nations for imposing travel bans, claiming it's not informed by science, nor will it prevent the spread of the virus. Cyril Ramaphosa says the bans amount to discrimination against his country. And some of the world's top scientists are also urging caution, saying we need to know more about the variant before major decisions are made. David Lipson reports.
Much of the world has acted on instinct, imposing bans and quarantine orders for those travelling from southern Africa. But the reaction is being driven more by uncertainty than scientific fact. Even the top immunologists, like Dr. Anthony Fauci, the chief medical advisor to the US president, are making educated guesses.
The profile of the mutation strongly suggests that it's going to have an advantage in transmissibility and that it might evade immune protection that you would get, for example, from a monoclonal antibody or from the convalescent serum after a person's been infected, and possibly even against some of the vaccine-induced antibodies. So it's not necessarily that that's going to happen, but it's a strong indication that we really need to be prepared for that.
Dr. Fauci also points to data outside the lab, specifically the speed at which the Omicron variant took hold in South Africa.
It just kind of exploded, in the sense that when you look in South Africa, you were having a low level of infection, and then all of a sudden there was this big spike. And when the South Africans looked at it, they said, oh my goodness, this is a different virus than we've been dealing with.
Yeah.
So it clearly is giving indication that it has the capability of transmitting rapidly.
If the Omicron strain can evade the vaccines more easily, that's an obvious problem. What needs to be determined, and fast, is how serious the mutation is in terms of actual illness, with experts in South Africa suggesting the symptoms are actually comparatively mild. If that's the case, it would likely see a less dangerous strain of coronavirus replace the dominant Delta variant, That could even lead to the pandemic being downgraded to an epidemic. But it's still too early to tell. In South Africa, where the Omicron strain is already well and truly loose, the President Cyril Ramaphosa isn't changing his lockdown settings.
In taking the decision not to impose further restrictions at this stage, we considered the fact that when we encountered previous waves of infection, vaccines were not widely available and far fewer people were vaccinated. This is no longer the case.
And the president has ripped into countries that have imposed travel bans on South Africa and neighbouring countries.
This is a clear and completely unjustified departure from the commitment that many of these countries made at the meeting of the G20 countries in Rome last month. Now, these restrictions are completely unjustified and unfairly discriminate against our country and our Southern African sister countries. The prohibition of travel is not informed by science, nor will it be effective in preventing the spread of this variant. The only thing the prohibition on travel will do is to further damage the economies of the affected countries and undermine their ability to respond to and also to recover from the pandemic.
Whatever happens now, experts say it's a wake-up call for the world to start acting together to ensure developing countries are supported to vaccinate their populations. WHO Ambassador for Global Health Financing Gordon Brown says wealthy nations are seriously lagging on their commitments.
Only 25% of what America has promised in vaccines to the rest of the world has been delivered. Only 11% of what Britain's promised has been delivered. 19% of the European Union, only 5% of Canada. This is an emergency that's got to be dealt with, whatever happens to this particular variant.
That's WHO Ambassador for Global Health Financing, Gordon Brown. David Lipson, our reporter there. With just four sitting days left for the year, the clock's ticking for the federal government to introduce bills to deliver on key election promises. And if last week is any guide, with some coalition MPs threatening and doing their own thing, the final sitting week for 2021 could be a rough ride for the Prime Minister. Political reporter Claudia Long joined me earlier from Parliament House. Claudia, the federal government promised to set up an integrity commission at the last election, but will we actually see this proposal come before Parliament?
Well, Sabra, it doesn't seem likely because the government is refusing to introduce their legislation to Parliament for debate. So it has had a proposal for an integrity commission ready for some time now, made up of a law enforcement integrity division and a public sector integrity division. But senior lawyers, along with Labor and crossbench MPs, have called this proposal toothless. They've called it secretive. Now, the government firmly disagrees on that. And over the weekend, we got to hear from Attorney General Michaelia Cash. Here's what she had to say on the matter.
We took on board all of the relevant feedback, but we have determined that the model that we have put in place is a fair model. It is a balanced model, and as the Prime Minister said, it will deal with instances of the most serious criminal corruption at a federal level. That is what this bill is all about. It's not, as the Prime Minister said, a political witch hunt, which the Labor Party seemed to want it to be. We have a bill. If Labor indicated that they would support the bill, our situation would be very, very different.
Attorney General Michaelia Cash there, and as you heard there, the main reason the government isn't bringing forward its bill is because Labor won't back it in. Now, that's a bit unusual given the point of the Parliament is essentially to debate legislation, you know, perhaps allow some amendments, but ultimately negotiate to get bills passed. And like you mentioned, Sabra, this is an election promise from 2019, and now we're on the eve of another campaign, you know, given an election must be held before the end of May next year. Now, this whole situation has gotten some backbenchers pretty annoyed. So you might remember last week, one of the government's own MPs crossed the floor on this, Bridget Archer, who represents the marginal seat of Bass in Tassie. She actually backed independent Helen Haynes' push last week to bring forward debate on her bill for an anti-corruption commission, a vote the government only won in the lower house on a technicality, Sabra.
And Claudia, another matter that's been on the government's agenda for some time is regulating the social media companies. What's the latest?
Yes, that's right. So over the weekend, we heard from the Prime Minister and Attorney General on this. So the government is proposing social media companies be forced to reveal the identities of anonymous users in a bid to try and essentially crack down on people who harass people online, so trolls. Now, these laws would require social media companies to collect the personal details of all users, which is quite different, I think, as any of us who've signed up for an account lately would know. You don't actually have to provide your identity details. Now, courts would also be allowed to force companies to hand over the identities of users to help in defamation cases. And the Prime Minister says that'll keep users safer online.
The online world provides many great opportunities, but it comes with some real risks. And we must address these or it will continue to have a very harmful and corrosive impact on our society, on our community. Our government has been taking action on this.
That's the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, there. And Claudia, if last week is any indication, the final sitting week for 2021 won't be straightforward for the government when it comes to getting votes in the parliament, will it?
No, indeed, Sabra. So a number of government MPs in both houses of parliament are either threatening to cross the floor or withhold their votes for a number of reasons as well. So as we were discussing a little earlier, Bridget Archer from Bass in Tasmania, she's from the moderate wing of the coalition, and she crossed the floor to vote against the government on integrity last week. And up in the Senate, government members Alex Antic and Jared Rennick, they're maintaining their stance that they will withhold their votes for a very different reason. They want to see the government intervene with state-imposed vaccination mandates. Now, the government has said they have no intention of doing any such thing, but that could cause them a few problems politically because they don't actually have a majority in the Senate. So even on a good day, if they want to get legislation through the upper house, they're going to need their whole team on the same page and ready to vote, along with a few crossbenchers on top of that to get it through. So it looks like we're going to have an interesting week in Canberra.
Claudia Long there. A Manhattan courtroom's due to hear opening arguments later today in the sex trafficking case against Jeffrey Epstein's former companion, Ghislaine Maxwell. She's accused of helping the late disgraced financier groom, sexually abuse and traffic underage girls, charges Maxwell denies. During her 16-month detention, Maxwell's lawyers have repeatedly tried to have the case thrown out and have compared her conditions with those experienced by the fictional character Hannibal Lecter. North America correspondent Barbara Miller compiled this report.
Your Excellencies, Presidents, Lords, ladies and gentlemen.
The daughter of a publishing magnate who died in mysterious circumstances, a socialite who associated with presidents and princes, a campaigner for the oceans.
My passion for the ocean started when I was a little girl. I grew up watching Jacques Cousteau on TV and became
mesmerized. Now finds herself in the headlines for very different reasons.
Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein are untouchable until it all came crashing down around them.
The death by apparent suicide of Ghislaine Maxwell's former partner, Jeffrey Epstein, in a jail cell in 2019, meant his many accusers never had their chance to see him in court. That's led Ghislaine Maxwell's lawyers to argue she's being made a scapegoat for the disgraced financier. But Stephen Giller is professor of legal ethics at NYU School of Law, says he doesn't support the argument that Ms. Maxwell is facing trial by proxy.
She is accused of independent misconduct, unrelated to what he actually did. The accusations, she worked as a procurer of underage girls to travel across state lines to have sex with Epstein, and she knew what she was doing, and she groomed them. The government's position is that she made much of what he did possible.
The alleged crimes of helping Jeffrey Epstein groom, abuse and traffic underage girls took place between 1994 and 2004 in locations including New York, Palm Beach, Santa Fe and London. Four women are expected to testify that they were the victims of the powerful pair. It's not known if the defendant will take the stand. Tiffany Jeffers is an associate professor at Georgetown University Law Center and former prosecutor.
I think it's risky for defendants to testify, but, you know, she also has resources to prep. So the defense may think it's a good strategy to put her up.
The trial is expected to last 6 weeks. Two additional charges of perjury relating to a civil case brought by Epstein accuser and Australian resident Virginia Dufresne will be tried at a later date. This is Barbara Miller in New York reporting for AM.
That's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Sabra Lane.
Hi, I'm Ange Lavoie-Pierre.
And I'm Stephen Smiley, and we're from the ABC's daily news podcast, The Signal.
Even though the current pandemic has years more to run, world leaders are already meeting to plan for the next one. So what are they looking at?
Today on The Signal, what are the lessons from COVID-19 and can we do better? Look for The Signal on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.